now more than ever, people need to go within and plug into that cellular memory, plug into divine source, detach as much as possible from the matrix.
Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. Today, our very special guest is an old friend. Lorena and I have been friends for a long time. She is a MyLab, has had reptilian experiences. She and I have had many experiences together in group training, in group ops, etc., etc. And Lorena has had far more, as far as I know, far more experiences than I have as far as reptilians and MyLabs are concerned. And you know, there are a handful of people that I learned the most from in this life as far as the reptilians, military experiences, etc. A lot of it had to do with rekindling ancient past life memories of who I was and where I came from. And Lorena played a key part in this because Lorena, like myself, is a Scorpio. She has a very good retentive memory, and she was able to retain a lot of conscious awareness during her experiences, which was, at the time, I felt was astonishing. And she was able to bring back a lot of information from experiences, and it helped rekindle a lot of memories and what have you with me. And I regard Lorena as one of my teachers in life. So without any further ado, welcome to the Cosmic Switchboard Show.
Thank you, James. Nice to be on.
Ecstatic to have you on here. Without going into too much detail, could you tell us a bit about your background? And you lived in the high desert of Southern California. Tell us a bit about yourself and how you found yourself in these situations.
I've lived in the high desert, well, at least, 20, 25 years. And the place where I used to live, because I moved there, you know, after that, like I said, I've lived there. It's a rural area. It's away from roads and streets, and I think the military chose that area because it's so rural and so secluded from everybody that they can do or experiment. It's what they told me. You know, I came across them when I saw my first reptilian. It was a little baby reptilian that I saw, and well, actually, my daughter saw it because she was feeding it, and I thought it was an invisible friend. And she kept asking me to make her a couple of peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, you know. So long story short, I finally followed her in the room, and she put out a peanut butter and jelly sandwich in the closet, and a little came out of there. And I looked at it, and it looked like a little lizard, almost the shape of Barney from the cartoons.
Yes.
It was a cartoon, but it had a round little snout, cutest little thing. And he was sitting, you know, he was standing, and he was eating the peanut butter jelly sandwich that my daughter made for it. And when it saw me, it just kind of looked at me and went into the closet, and I pulled my daughter away, and I looked and I checked, and I took everything out of there, and I couldn't find it. Well, I've had friends, and of course you, James, and other neighbors, and I kept asking, you know, I saw this thing, and I kept making a lot of phone inquiries, and three military men came knocking at my door after my children, my two other children, were in school, and they knocked on the door, and they said, yeah, we heard that you're making a lot of phone inquiries about, you know, what you've seen. He goes, tell us what you saw, and of course, I was frightened, you know, I was scared, and you know, said, can we come in? And I let them in, and they said, well, we want to know what you saw, what, you know, what's going on, and stop making these phone calls. It's just, you know, nobody's business. You know, we'll take care of it, and we're going to set up traps, and don't worry about it, but stop making phone inquiries. We don't want anybody to know because it's experimental, is what they told me.
Uh-huh.
And then they left. And of course, after they left, I got on the phone. I was like, did you know these three military men came and told me this and that? And, you know, and then they came back about a month later, because I was still having this cute little lizard reptilian looking thing, you know, coming in and out of the closet. And I, you know, of course I called you, James, and a few other friends. And one night, I think it was maybe 1, 2 o'clock in the morning, toys were going off in my kids' room because I didn't let them sleep in their room because I was afraid that little lizard would come out, the little reptilian would come out and hurt my kid. Even though he hadn't, I was still very fearful. He was actually looking at the toys. He was observing the toys. You know, if they had buttons, he would switch them on, and because he was very curious of the toys my daughter, you know, had laid out for it, you know. And then it ran, and I wanted to catch it, so I accidentally stepped on its tail, and it let out the biggest scream I could, you know, I've ever heard. It's like a squeal kind of, and then his teeth came out, and I thought, you know, because from what I saw, it was rounded, but I didn't see any teeth or anything. But when I stepped on the tail, it lay, you know, it sounded like a big hiss, kind of shrieking, you know, and then I saw the sharp teeth. And of course, my foot, you know, went, came off his tail, and then he jumped into the closet, which, by the way, it was a portal. What is it?
A portal.
It opened up. It was black, and it was a hole. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, I've never seen a hole in this closet. But it was, you know, it was a black hole, and that little thing jumped right through it. It was gone. It disappeared. And then I turned on the lights and got the flashlight. The hole was gone. I'm like, how in the heck did that happen? And then the military, they came back, and, you know, they knocked on the door, and it was about, I'd say, 9 o'clock in the morning. And I told him, I said, look, these things, he goes, don't worry about it. You know, we got this under control. We've got people, you know, out looking for it. And he says, but please stop making, you know, phone calls. We don't want, this is a top secret, you know, so we don't want anybody knowing anything. But like I said, I was scared. I was, you know, it scared the hell out of me, you know, that the military wasn't doing anything. I called the police. And the police told me that it was a government matter. They said that they were not able to do anything because it was a government matter. So I couldn't even call the police to even come and help me. Well, you know, what could they do anyway? Or the animal shelter. It's like it wasn't a dog or a cat, so they couldn't do anything. They just said, it's a lizard. It's, oh, no, we don't really go, you know, we don't really capture lizards. And it's like, no, it's not a lizard. It's a reptilian now. So they thought it was crazy. So I just stopped making phone calls and just started making phone calls to friends that actually believed me. And, you know, we try to set up traps to see if we can catch it. And no, we were not able. We were not successful in that.
The thing that was interesting to me, too, was the little reptilian seemed to have this friendship going on with the little daughter. And for the listeners out there, I mean, I held this little girl in my arms. I mean, I watched her grow up, and now she's grown up to be a beautiful young woman. But I remember her as a little girl. And this reptilian would come out and play with her. And remember that toy that looked like a phone with these like letters and numbers on it. And then when you pressed a certain key, it would emit a certain tone, right?
A musical little tone that it would play. Yes, I remember that. I think I still have that, actually.
Well, yeah, that would be a collector's item, because you remember that story you told me when, I don't know, it was during the daytime or nighttime or whatever, and you started hearing those tones in there, like someone was playing with the phone, but you knew your kids weren't home or they were not in that room. Do you remember that story?
Yes, I do. Actually, they were sleeping on the couch because I wouldn't let them sleep in the bedroom because I was scared. But I remember the cute little sound, and I thought, oh my God, who's up? Which one of the kids are up playing in the room when they're not supposed to be in there? And I went from my room to the living room, and I saw the kids, and they were sleeping on the couch. And then I went and I slightly opened the door, and just a little crack in the door, and I looked. These toys were levitated. They were up in the air, and this little reptilian-looking little thing had this little black wand that it was holding in its little hand, and it levitated these toys up in the air. And when it saw me, he dropped, you know, he put his little hand down, and all the toys fell to the ground. I couldn't run out of the hallway fast enough. But it was crazy.
Speaking of which, do you remember that time when, and I've shown people these sketches. In fact, Our friend from back in those days, Craig, was a pretty good artist. In fact, Craig was the one that drew the cover
To
art
do
on,
them.
yeah, on Evie's book, The Alien Love Bite. Evie Lorgan was another friend of ours in those old high desert days that was always out there with me. And that sketch of the two small reptilians, the two, I guess, baby reptilians, immature reptilians, holding one of those wands and what it was doing to you. Do you want to tell that story? Because you were wrestling with the reality of all this. You were asking yourself, is this real? Am I going crazy? And then, suddenly they show up as if to make an object lesson and let you know that this is not crazy, this is real, and they did something to you. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do. What I don't drink. I don't drink alcohol. I don't do drugs, not even prescription drugs. So I'm thinking, well, I couldn't be imagining this stuff. And I was actually having a nervous breakdown. And my husband at the time, was, trying to encourage me to go to a psychiatrist because I was having a nervous breakdown because I was scared. And I couldn't make sense of what I was seeing, but I knew it had to be real because the military was involved. And the military wouldn't just come out to investigate, and set up supposedly traps that they had these cages, that they were going to get if this wasn't real. And like I said, I've never smoked, not even marijuana, never clean, never done any of that stuff. So I'm thinking it couldn't be anything I could be eating or drinking. So I couldn't understand, I couldn't wrap my mind on what I was seeing and hearing, and with the military, putting pressure on me not to say anything or do anything, that they would handle it. I knew that something wasn't right, but I knew I wasn't going crazy because the military was in the flesh. My neighbors would see them and they'd say, "Hey, what are those military guys coming?" I go, "Oh, I don't know. They're just, doing a survey." I mean, I had to come up with some lies because I didn't want them to think I was, involved in anything crazy. But I know that my neighbors were saying that they were taking pictures of the house, and so I couldn't be going crazy if these three military men were solid and other people saw them. So anyway, it was nighttime. I had a big Rottweiler at the time. I thought, you know what? I want to bring that Rottweiler in the house. This way, these little things, won't hurt me or the kids or anything. And there was two of them this time, and one of them, like I said, had a little wand. And I thought, oh, my Rottweiler probably tear them up, kill them, do something to them. They put my Rottweiler to sleep. They aimed that little thing. My Rottweiler didn't get up, and then they aimed it at me, and I started levitating. And I thought, oh my God, I. Because I think they did that just for their own protection, because they didn't want me either to step on their tail, grab at them or anything. So this black wand was aimed at me, and I was levitating, and I was up on the ceiling. And I thought, you know what? I'm not going to make any sudden movements because I don't want to fall. But I looked down, and I saw by my fireplace, my dog, and he was in a dead sleep, because they aimed it at him. He was sleeping, and I just stood there, I mean, floating in the air, watching these little things look around. I don't know what they were looking for, what they wanted, but I just know that whatever this little black thing was, they aimed it at me. I was up on the ceiling, and after they were done, they just slowly brought me down, and they went back into the closet, and the dog woke up, and everything was back to normal. And I thought, my God, I couldn't understand what was going on, and who could I tell? So I honestly thought I was having a nervous breakdown, but because of my close friends, James and Evie and Craig and a few handful of people that actually, came to my, you guys came to the house, I was able to tell you what was going on, and you believed me, and that helped my sanity.
Yeah, and also I imagine being levitated, close to the ceiling by by the little reptilian, in a way, also helped your sanity because you knew what was happening at that moment was real.
Exactly. Exactly.
Now, things kind of, And one little aside from my standpoint, but before I go on, because then the adult reptilians started showing up, and that was a whole different level of like craziness that was going on at that point. Because, there were all these active portals there, not just in the children's bedroom, which Craig and I had spent many times sleeping in that bedroom, but also in the living room and other places. But I remember this one time you were cleaning the house up because Craig and I were going to come in. We were going to spend the weekend and do another reptilian stakeout in the bedroom, the children's bedroom, where the portal was. And I think that was another time when you stepped on the tail of the little reptilian when you were going in or out of the bathroom, and then it did something to the bar of soap. Do you remember that? It was almost like a
It scratched.
calling card.
Yeah. To tell me that they were still around, because I know that the military, the way that I vividly remember all of this is that I had my phone, and then I don't know if you remember this, James, but what they would do is they would call me on the phone. The phone would make these click click kind of noises, and they would put me in a trance almost.
Yes.
And then I could hear somebody on the other phone saying, the van is going to come to the front, of the, of your driveway. Get into the van. And remember, I told you that there was the military at the time had, it was called, I think, the Devil's Eye, up in, up on Trussing Ranch. There was a hill top that, this van, white van with the U.S. government license plate number on it, black tinted windows, drove up. I got in. Why? I mean, and I knew that it was wrong. I knew I didn't want to go, but I did. I just kind of like, and I know it had to do with the phone call, because the phone call, once I answered the phone, it was like they programmed it somehow, to for me to respond and to almost obey what was being said. And I did. I got into the van. They took me into the van. We went up to, and I know we were going up this mountain. And I remember I was trying to look out the window, but it was dark because the windows were tinted. And then they would say, "Lorena, keep your eyes straight." And I was like, "Okay, just, don't look around. Just keep focus. Keep your eyes on me only." And then I remember they took me up in this mountain, and the way I can just, and I've never been able to find this mountain, the site that, that I was taken to, but I know it was three levels. And the first level, when you first went there, it's like a big, huge rock. And then they pressed something, and it opened up. The wall or the rock opened up. We went in there, took a few steps. I looked on the ground and I thought, "Oh my God, the rock opened up." And I looked at the ground, and the ground, it was in dirt. It was dirty. But then you started walking further in, and then it another door would open up, and it was like a military base. It was there. I saw military people sitting down, and on they had tables, and they looked like they had computers. And then I remember looking in the corner, there was a round looking table with a big screen TV looking behind them. And it was before the flat screens came up. I looked and I went, "Wow, that looks like a TV, but it's flat. I've never seen anything like that. Interesting." And the guy was right there, and he was on the computer and, looking, and, there was a military man that was standing there by the door, and he had his gun, his rifle to the side of him. And I looked around, and the floors were wax, because it got my attention, because everything in there was white. It was real clean, and the floors looked like they had just freshly been waxed, and it was really, really nice. So I remember, I don't know why they were giving me a tour. I once asked them, "Why do you guys even tell me anything?" And they said, he goes, "Who's going to believe you? You're just a housewife from Apple Valley." And I'm like, "Okay, that makes sense." Because I'm not college educated. I took a couple courses, but I don't have, college behind me. I'm not a, professor or anything. And, just a housewife that raised, four beautiful children. And then, anyway, after the first level, I went to the second level on the top, and they told me it's with a helicopter, because the way I saw it, you could stand there, and it was kind of like a platform, with the big X where, they said the military helicopters can land there. It opens up and then it closes. And a lot of people where I live in Apple Valley on Cushing Ranch would say it almost looks like a beam of light is coming out of the mountain, and then it just closes. It just shuts off. And then I understood it's when they opened it and the helicopter would land there, and then they would close it. So I saw the top level, and then the middle level where I was at, and then on the bottom level, they had all kinds of like cages, and the cages are all empty, but there was men and women in lab coats. And I looked, and I'm like, "What is this for?" And he goes, "Oh, this is where we do the experiments." And I'm thinking, what kind of experiments are they doing? But they did have big cages. And then in one particular cage, I remember that I saw something, but it didn't look human. I mean, it kind of had the face of a human, but almost like the movie The Fly, where it was like a human mixed with something else. And I looked at it, and I know that it was a female, because of the, and it would just look at me, and it kept, and in a sorry, painful voice, it looked at me and said, "Help me." And I just looked, I'm like, "What is that?" And it was crawling because it couldn't stand up. It was like dragging itself. And I was scared, but at the same time, I felt sorry for it because just the expression on her face looked like she was in pain, and she wanted out of that cage that it was in. And I was scared, and they said, "Don't remember this. You won't remember this. Just a dream. You're just having a dream." And then, as soon as they told me that, I kept telling myself, "Remember her. Remember her." And I kept thinking, "God, if I could go back there," and it eats up at me to this day, James, that I couldn't help her. I tried. I've been back. All I remember is that I remember a stream. I can remember water running, but I can't find my way back to that place. But I never knew what happened to that woman that they had in that cage. But I know it's dressed like in a like in a hospital gown, but it was like the face was human, kind of distorted, but the body wasn't human. But I to this day, and to the rest of my life, I'll never forget. I'll never forget that. And I regret not being able, I mean, part of me just, I wasn't able to help her. I did nothing, to get help to her, but what can I do? And that's not the first time they've taken me to this three-story place there on Tussing Ranch, well, past Tussing Ranch, a few times, because I remember another incident where I asked them about that flat. It looked like a TV, but it was flat. And like I said, it was before the screen TVs came out. And then I kind of, now I go, that's what it was. It was a flat screen TV. They had one before it came out. But I asked them, "What is this?" And they said, "Give me a name." So I said, "Hey, Craig." And that's one of our mutual friends. And I said, "Well, okay, I'll give you Craig's name." And they punched in his name and everything. And then it came right up. The little screen lit up, and they said, "Okay, he is in Las Vegas, Nevada. His address is whatever, whatever." And they said, "Okay." And then they showed me the screen. They even showed me James when he was in bed sleeping in his boxer shorts. And I'm like, "Oh my God, they can actually see." And they said, "Yeah, we have trackers on all of our people that we have," because they said that they bundled us up in groups. I think we were sometimes I've been known as a color. Oh, she's in the red group or blue group, or she's number, so I know we've been numbered, and we belong in different groups.
Yeah, I think you
Because
and
I
I
can,
were in the same group before too.
in the same group. Because I know that they would tell us to do something like that one, and James there, and where they put us in a, and they said, "Okay, well, I want you to do this." And then they had another person there and said, "I want you to shoot him." I'm like, "I can't shoot. There's no way I can shoot this person." And then they were in lab coats. They had their little pencils with their little tablets that they would write on. It was that, you know, that looks like a little the wood with it,
Yeah,
binder,
the clipboards.
the clipboard. So this one doesn't want to do it. And they're like, James, you go over there, you know, do this and do that. And you're like, it's not my nature. It's not in my, and they said, just do it. And we were both stubborn. We didn't do it, you know. But I remember after maybe the fifth or sixth time, I did do it. You know, I did pull that trigger. And when I did pull the trigger, that person, it just like evaporated or just poof, they were gone. But I'm thinking, why did I do it? Know, you didn't, but I did. I know that they always question you, or they always said that you were very smart as far as planning and strategies. So that's why they were experimenting or trying to take notes on you know, on you. But with me, they just said that I was very stubborn, and that what was the term they used? They said she's this one's a stubborn one, and you know she you know she can remote view, and you know so she'll come in handy or something with me. So I know they said I was pretty stubborn. And that was the only reason why I think they were interested. But as far as the other people that I've seen before, they'd say, no, this one's not going to work out. No, this is typical of this person or these kind of people. But I know that our group was a little more defiant, I think. It's probably why they used us quite a bit, I guess.
They use this in a lot of team training,
Scenarios.
yeah, scenarios where they would put us through not just physical training. And I remember that stream you were talking about. Was it the same stream that was underground where some military instructor was showing us some kind of eel-like kind of like a river eel or something underwater? And it was some kind of like an electric eel or something that put out its own electric field, and we were being, taught by this guy to be careful of it, but we were also being taught to talk to it telepathically. Do you remember that experience?
I do vaguely remember, but I do remember that when we were able, when they told us, you know, or put us in certain scenarios, I would start talking. They said, no, you talk with them, you know, in your head, in your mind, you know, and he will respond. I'm like, James, can you hear me? And he said, yeah, I can.
There were times when we would respond in like a foreign language. Like, we're not going to mention a certain friend's name, but do you remember that time when she kept responding to you in these different languages and you had to tell her just speak in English,
In
because
English.
you know Spanish. You know Spanish and you know English, right?
Yep, I remember. Military was using us as, you know, because I know we were experimental. I know that. You know, I understand. And they were trying to see, you know, what maybe we retained, what we were able to forget. But I know that they told me that we all had implants. I do recall that. I don't know if you remember, but we do all have, you know, chips that were put in. You know, they said they're no bigger than a grain of sand, a grain of sand. But I was asking, well, how do you know where James and Craig and you guys are all chipped? So I'm like, we are? So, and they said, you can run, but you cannot hide, because these chips will go, you know, even X amount of feet underground, so they could still find you, you know, if they wanted to, until we're done. And I'm like, so then you come back and take the chip out, or have they taken the chip out? And then I do recall once I moved away from that area, they, you know, I was sleeping in bed, and they put something up my nose. They had three little prongs, and they said, oh, we're taking the old ones and putting in the new chip, and you know, so we can, you know, this is even better than what we've had. I'm like, oh my God, that means I'm still chipped. You know, they still can find me. But I think that certain amount of certain people are chipped and grouped in certain groups of people, you know, that's what I believe. And they every so often come and check and see how we're doing, what we're doing. And you know, it's been a while since they've, you know, they've even come around here. But I'm always waiting for the day that they come. As a matter of fact, three military came up here, and where I live now is even more rural and away from houses, and they were still able to find me. And my boyfriend, said, "Oh, he doesn't believe in any of this. Is he just? I think it's just because he doesn't want to because he's afraid." But then when he saw the three military out of nowhere, they just walked, and they were wearing tan. They walked up in front of my house, and I was on the porch with my boyfriend, and then we both looked at each other. He looked at me, and he goes, "Oh, those are your people. They're your friends." And then they looked at me and they gave me a look like and shook their head and then continued walking up. And when you go up to this little mountain that we live in, there's only one way out. You have to come back and double back. They never came back this way. So we don't know if they cut across or what they did, but it was almost like a message, like, watch your P's and Q's, but it didn't scare me because I'm old enough now that I don't even care anymore. They've already done the worst that they can do. They've already done the blood and, tissue samples and urine samples. It's like they already got my brain and whatever God knows, what else they've got from me that it doesn't matter. I'm getting older now that I can go out any time. It doesn't matter to me. So I'm not scared anymore. They don't scare me. So that's why I feel comfortable, if I'm, interviewing, or someone writing a book, because I don't fear them anymore like I did.
Yeah, we've come a long way together because what happened was, just for the edification of our listeners, when I got to know Lorena because Barbara Bartholik, my mentor, told me to call up Joyce Spivey, and Joyce has since passed away, like Barbie has passed away. But Barbie had been in comms with Joyce Spivey in the high desert there, the Victorville Barstow area, for some time. They'd been comparing notes. Barbie has this group, a large group of abductees that she works with in Tennessee, not Tennessee, but rather Oklahoma and in Arkansas and Texas, and actually all over the place because she had clients from all over the world. They would fly in from all over the world to see Barbie Bartholik. And somewhere along the line, she got to know Joyce Spivey. And Joyce had this group of which Lorena was a part. Of people who were not only having ET experiences, but as we now call them, MyLab experiences. So Barbie knew that I was starting to have MyLab experiences because I told her, I go, yeah, this is happening in the military, showing up, I'm finding myself in these weird places. And then she said, well, why don't you call up Joyce Spivey because she works with people that have these issues. I go, oh, that's a good idea. And then I called her. And as fate would have it, there was going to be a meeting between all of you guys that particular weekend, right? That's just interesting how all this stuff worked. And Evie Lorgan and I went up there. And Donna Hendershot, our dear friend Donna, who's since passed away, she had a lot of MyLab experiences, a lot of ET experiences. She was there. We met her. We met you, of course. And we had Craig come down from Las Vegas, right? That's where you first met Craig. And so we got to know you at that point. And by that point, because of all the, harassment you were getting from the military, from the reptilians, you were getting a lot of interference with too, because after a point in time, it wasn't just the little immature reptoids. Then the bigger adult reptilians started showing up and causing problems. And but there was another key aspect to what I learned from you, right? And that was the anorexia, obsessive compulsive disorder thought loops, because the listeners need to understand that your bloodline, I believe, it has some kind of Native American kind of aspect to it, or some kind of Mexican American aspect to it, where you just have second sight. You're psychic. Your mother had, second sight too, if memory serves. So you were born with these gifts to begin with, and you were, able to see things and perceive things that other people were not able to perceive normally, including the presence of invisible beings, invisible to everyone else in the room, but not to you. Could you tell our listeners what happened when this reptilian began showing up, and amongst other things it was doing to you, it kept putting this thought form in your head that you were overweight and that you had to starve yourself in order to, you know, get down to a normal weight, and then it kind of triggered this defiance in you where, in order to spite this thing, you almost made yourself malnourished. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do. I was actually hospitalized for that, and I was tied to a bed and forced intravenously fed because it got really bad. When we went that meeting that you were, you know, talking about with Joyce and everybody, that meeting saved my life because with everything that was going on, I wasn't sleeping. And then they would come, the bigger reptilians would come, and they would, you know, say things to me like, don't eat this. And when I would try to eat something, it almost looked like it was moving, to where I was so disgusted and afraid to eat it that I didn't eat. And I was down, I was 150 pounds. And I think the lowest weight, I think it was like 82 pounds that I was weighing, because I was afraid to eat, you know, because they told you, don't eat, you know, we don't want you to eat. You know, and it's like, I couldn't understand why, but, you know, they just said, focus, don't eat. And every time I would eat something or even think about it, the food would start moving around or look so disgusting or maggots coming out of it that I thought I was hallucinating this stuff. Ugh. But then finally I just said, you know what? I don't want to die. I've got my kids. I didn't want to leave them, you know, without a mother. So even though the stuff was moving and disgusting and, you know, I was being told not to eat it, I forced myself to eat it because my husband, you know, then when I was married, was going to, he already had it planned and to have me committed to a mental institution because I couldn't eat, couldn't sleep. I was losing so much weight, you know, that he thought, and suicide and, I hate to talk about it, but I was right there because I was afraid. I was afraid to take a shower. I was afraid to, you know, to do anything because I was afraid that, you know, I was being watched, you know, because they told me, you know, we see everything that you do. And I was afraid. I was afraid to take a shower. At that time, I think I hadn't bathed or showered in a month. But that day, you know, when they said, hey, you know what, we have a meeting, and I thought that that's when they were going to commit me, but I took a shower, got dressed, and that day saved my life because there was other people with similar experiences, and I thought, my God, it's just not me, you know, and these were people, doctors, dentists, you know, people that were more than just a housewife from Apple Valley, you know. But that day, it saved my life. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to fight back and I'm going to remember, you know, I'm going to try to remember whatever little details I can remember to force myself, you know, not to forget what is being done to me.
And I remember that meeting. You were rail thin. I mean, you were rail thin. You were wearing a purple outfit. And you and Craig, you know, really got along like a house on fire, just went off into a corner together. And, you know, you connected so much and you were talking so much. And I got to know the others in the meeting who many of them subsequently became dear friends. Donna Hendershot, she since passed away, like I said.
And Joyce.
And we all, a lot of us started having these. It was almost as if, oh, now we got them in one meeting together. We're going to start, you know, up till now we've been using them individually. Let's start using them in a
group together.
We want to
know what they're, see, I got the, you know, they wanted to see what we, you know, what we were able to recollect in our experiences and put them together is what I think. Otherwise, they would have broken up that meeting a long time ago. All of our little, you know, meetings that we, you know, that we had and going to other people's houses and, you know, just to make sure that, you know, our houses, because I found out later through my friend, our mutual friend, Joyce, that my house was being bugged. That's how the military knew that I was on the phone making phone inquiries about what I've seen, what I've heard. And they also gave me, they also made a death threat when they came to my door and they said, if you continue, you're going to be sleeping with the fish. And I'm like, well, and I was naive, stupid. And I'm like, I don't even know how to swim. We don't have a lake around here. And they said, do you not understand? You're going to be tied, your ankles are going to be tied and thrown in the ocean. I'm like, you're threatening me? And that's when that sparked that I thought, how in the heck do you come to my house and now you're threatening to, you know, to kill me if I say anything? And I was on fire then because I thought, what the hell? And I did call 911 and they said, no, this is a government matter. I'm sorry. You know, but what I think happened is because at the time my phone was being bugged is they have another operator that they sent it through because I have a mutual friend in the police department and they said, my call never went through. You know,
yeah.
So I know they were transferring the calls to, you know, another, you know, it was rerouted somewhere else. So it never went through, you know, the 911 thing, but they knew that I did call and say, hey, these men came to my house, a military, and they threatened, you know, to, you know, throw me to the fishes. They were going to tie cement bricks, you know, on the bottom of my ankles and throw me in the ocean. And they said, well, who made that threat? And it's military. It's just a scare tactic. Don't worry about it. But there's nothing we can do. Our hands are tight. You know, so it's like, okay.
You know, Donna was also one of those that they would call her up in the middle of the night or right before she went to sleep. And then the voice on the other end, a male voice, would start reading a series of numbers. And this could be triggering to some of the listeners out there. So please stay grounded. You know, just grip a piece of shungite or hematite, and if you start to feel kind of, you know, anxious or whatever, then just pause this and listen some other time. But, you know, because Joyce Spivey and I talked about this, one of the ways that they, because it progressed from taking people away in vans to later on they began teleporting people to the underground base. Mm-hmm. I mean, it really started getting woo-woo after a while, you know what I mean? And so Donna was one of those people.
Well, I remember being teleported, James. I'm sorry.
Yeah, go ahead, please.
But I remember because when they asked me, it was when they did this to me, you know, they put an object and then they, it was there and then it went. And then he was trying to explain to me, you know, in whatever.
Lay terms.
Exactly. But he just said, you know, he goes, have you ever seen the movie Star Trek? I said, of course. He goes, well, the molecules break down and this and then you're going to feel, he goes, don't get scared. He goes, you'll feel real light. The molecules start breaking down. And I don't remember exact word for word that he was using, but I know he said the molecules, they break down and then they arrive at this location. And he says, you can be in, you know, all Australia or Japan in just a matter of seconds. And I'm thinking, oh my God, it's like Star Trek, huh? And I said, wow, I didn't know that the military has come this far, you know? And I remember they shot this little beam or something at me. And then I remember it just like feeling really light, you know, and almost like an echoey kind of, you know, I felt like I was in a room where it was echoing. And then I remember being in a totally different place. I'm like, oh my God. And I was teleported to where they had the Romans, where they had that big old, where the lion, you know, they would go the chariot races.
Yeah. And the Colosseum, like, and places like that.
Yeah. And I'm like, oh my God. I go, what the heck am I doing here? And I just started laughing going, this is where they can bring you. And they said, we can even take you to the past, present, future. And I'm thinking, this is fantastic. I didn't know the military was this far advanced. You know, but I do remember, I you know, that they can send you or teleport you any place, you know, and I was back in a few seconds, you know, but it was interesting and I felt it. I felt, you know, it's almost like you're breaking down, you're getting small or something, and then an echoing and it just went, and that was it. And you were where you were at and I came back and I thought, this is fantastic. You know, but I didn't know the military was that far in advance, but I guess we are. But they said, when I asked them, I've never seen this on TV or I've never heard of this. It's just because it's not out. Do you think we tell everybody, you know, what we, you know, what our capabilities are? And I'm like, oh, I guess that would make sense. Interesting.
Yeah, and just for the edification of our listeners, what branch of the service do you recall most? Because I remember what branch of the service that I had encounters with mostly individually, as well as in that group that we were at. Do you recall that?
Mainly the tan uniform. It's the tan uniform, and but I've also seen them in lab coats. I've seen a lot in lab coats, but mainly I'm going to say it's tan. It's a tan uniform.
Like a khaki uniform, like a tan khaki
Yes.
uniform. And so basically, like the Navy, it was because what I recall and what I experienced, and you and I and others have talked about this, it seemed to be a deep black element of naval intelligence that was doing this, at least this particular group. And I have to emphasize to the listeners and stress to the listeners where okay, we're only describing what we experienced. We're not talking about what everyone else experiences. Someone else could be going through stuff with the Air Force, the Army, what I went through, what we went through at times together. It seemed to be this deep black element of the Navy. Now, part of the training, Lorena, was, and this will be a good segue before we go into part two, and we'll definitely have you on again because you've got so much information. Part of the training you went through was survival training, and they would
Yes.
you mentioned earlier how they would show you these at times these futuristic apocalyptic scenarios of what may happen and varying degrees of probability for each possible scenario. Could you tell us a bit about the things they showed you that may not happen, nothing written in stone, but what they wanted you to prepare for? And also, could you tell a bit about the training you went through, the survival training and the military training?
A few things actually. It's just they just said, to prepare. They said, get ready, but you'll never fully be ready. But I do remember them showing me, or I've seen 911 before it happened, because I remember, I was laying in bed, and I remember seeing the firemen. I remember they were knocking by the window, by my glass window, and I remember, they were showing me a what was going to happen, but I didn't know the year, the date, or anything. But they said it's going to be N New York, and I looked on the fireman's hat, and it said N, NYC on it. And I remember seeing a lot of policemen, firemen, and people, and they're like, "Where do we go? Where do we go? Help us! Help us!" And I kept having that flashback, a few times. And I'm thinking, I don't understand. And then they kept telling me, just remember 911. Please, for the love of God, just remember 911. And then I kept seeing all these people, and I remember they looked like they were burnt or fire because they had a lot of soot on them, And I'm thinking, oh my God. And then I could hear a lot of people, and they were just different conversations, like, tell my wife I love her, tell my son I'm sorry, tell, and I'm thinking something's going to happen. And I remember waking up, and I could say something's going to happen in New York, and I had a nephew in New York, and I called him up and I said, be careful, because I don't know when, I don't know how far, because sometimes they show me things that it's either going to happen or maybe just happened. But mainly it's they show me things, but they don't ever tell me the date, the time, the hour, but they can tell me 911. And I told my nephew, I said, be careful, because there's something going to happen in New York. And he says, okay, I'll be careful, because he believed me. He knew I do have some premonition, call it what it is. But I do remember that, and I remember these beautiful faces, these men and women, and I'm thinking, wow, what does this mean? And then a few months later, I know actually, I think it occurred a year later, I got a phone call, and it said, turn on the news. And I turned on the news, and it said, New York 911. I'm like, that's what they were trying to tell me, to remember 911. And then I cried for days, because when they showed the photographs of the people that had passed, those were the same faces that I saw, in my room. In the, there were, my room has a sliding glass door, so there was 60, 70, maybe 100, 200 people that were, you know, trying to get into my room, and only X amount were, you know, were able to fit by my, the foot of my bed. And they kept saying, help us, you know, what do we do? Where do we go? And I'm like, go to the light. I don't know. I didn't know. What do you tell them? And then I remember when the news came up, and you could see I broke down and I cried. I was so depressed, and I couldn't eat because I've seen those faces before they passed. And I saw them, and there was nothing that I could do. What can I do? Call the, you know, New York Police Department and say, this is what's going to happen? So that's one of the things. But I know that there's a few things that I've seen that haven't come to pass yet. But I remember that they said that it was going to start, something else is going to happen in New York, in Long Beach. And they said it's going to start down the hill from where I'm at, and it's going to move its way up. And I just remember people screaming and crying, and they're telling me, don't look back, just keep running. And I remember seeing children on the ground, and I wanted to pick them up, and they said, no, just keep moving, keep going. And I don't know. I know it's going to start in the sky. I see something in the sky, and I don't know if it's a rocket. I don't know if, you know, it's a missile. I don't know what it is, but I just remember looking up in the sky going, ooh, wow. And I can hear people going, ooh, wow. And all of a sudden, chaos. And that hasn't come to pass, but they told me, and God, I wish I could remember, but they said it has to do with there's going to be one of the signs, because I think there's like 1, 2, 3, maybe 4 signs. And they said when they come to pass is when this is all going to happen. And I know one of them has to do with the phone. There's going to be a new phone that's going to come out, you know, that's going to be a really nice phone. And then after that, there's going to be other devastations. I don't know, hurricane, tornado, twisters. That's why I'm glued to the TV now. That's going to, you know, happen. They said, like with the hurricanes, they haven't seen that in I don't know how many years. And then now look at it, the hurricanes, the earthquakes. And I'm thinking, oh my God, are we getting close? And I've gotten to the point now that I've become a hoarder with, you know, with food and first aid. I've got a backpack in my car, and, you know, just because I don't know when it's going to happen, but I, you know, I'm going to try and be ready. But they said, you'll never be ready for what's going to happen. And it's scaring the hell out of me, because I was hoping that I wouldn't be here when that happened, but it looks like I'm going to be. But it's scary, you know, and like I said, we've got water, we've got, you know, we're trying to get like a container so we can maybe hide underground, you know, if we can get the container and, you know, and get it permitted to, you know, we can dig it in our land and maybe be safer a little bit, but I don't know. But
well now your partner believes you basically now, right?
Oh, definitely. He said, yeah. He's become more of a food hoarder, and you know, he has more like a, you know, the knives and the hatchets and the, you know, just whatever tools that we're going to need. And he's almost like a MacGyver now, you know, which is nice, because now I know that if something happens, we're going to be okay. You know, we're not going to be fine, you know, I mean, because everybody's going to be running, you know, like a chicken with its head cut off. But I know that I have someone that I'm teamed up with, I think, that's going to be the one that's going to be able to fix things. And, you know, he knows electronics, and he knows how to catch animals and gut them. And, you know, so I think I'd be safe with him. And I'm more with the food and the first aid. And my daughter is nursing, you know, for the nursing thing. So I double order what she gets, so then I can make sure that I have things, you know, for us. But something's coming, and something big is going to happen here, you know. But I know that it's going to happen, because I remember seeing the Queen Mary, and I'm like, wait a minute, I thought the Queen Mary couldn't move. But I don't know if it's a tidal wave or what it was, but I remember seeing it move. And I remember, you know, a lot of people going, my God, this is the worst in history. So I know, I don't know if it's going to, but I just know it's going to start, they said, down the hill, and it's going to move its way up. You know, and I did see something in the sky fly, and now with the rocket man, it has me scared because I'm thinking, my God, I hope that's not what I saw. And they said it's going to fly up in the air and it's going to hit the ground and people are going to start running. But I know that they said New York and Long Beach for sure. I do remember, you know, and I'm like, poor New York. You know, and in Long Beach, I've got so many friends down there. And, you know, what can you tell them? You know, it's like I just tell them, be prepared. And they said, well, we'll try. But I don't know how you can prepare for something like that. But I do know something horrific is coming, that it's going to catch us by surprise.
Yeah, and the way things are trending, you know, they talk of nuclear war, ho-hum, like it's a tennis match or something. And we're being hammered by, now there's all these wildfires going off in California, and there were wildfires in Montana, and I'd been through some of these wildfires. You remember the 2004 Southern California wildfires, Lorena? I was in San Diego
yes,
at the
I did.
Time, and that was deliberately set. There was no doubt about it. It wasn't just San Diego County. It was L.A. County. It was all over. It was apocalyptic. There was ash falling from the sky. The sky wasn't just gray from all the smoke and ash. It was pink. It was like fiery
orange.
Looking.
Yeah.
It was orange. It was apocalyptic.
Yeah.
The air quality was horrific. And surprise, surprise, right after the fires hadn't even been entirely put out yet, but then there was all these calls for state, local, and federal agencies to work together better because there was no coordination. It was all problem, reaction, solution. I mean, the whole intent was to create all these fires in order to force these, what they used to call multi-jurisdictional task forces together. But now, you know, they want everything federalized, basically, right? So, you know,
right.
Yeah, and you see, it's not helping the people in Puerto Rico. It's not helping the people in Texas and whatnot. So, and another thing that happened in those days too was at times you were taught how to properly loot. Do you remember that? Where the military would take you to a store at night or something, and they say, "Okay, you've got only so much time. Go in there
what
and
are you
get
gonna
what
get?
You need."
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And they would dump it out and said, "What the hell?" I mean, like. I grabbed stupid things. Like I said, oh, I'll get some makeup because I wanted to look good. You know, at the time I was very vain, you know, and then said, makeup, what the hell are you going to have with makeup? And then they, you know, and then I started getting more real, and I grabbed underwear and certain things. He's like, pink underwear. Do you know what's going to happen to you? If you're seen out there with pink underwear, you're going to be raped and tortured and God knows what. I'm like, oh my God. So, yeah, they gave me, you know, X amount of time, go in there, get what, you know, you needed to get. They looked at my bag and said, nope, you're dead. You know, you're not going to make it. You know, and then I would do it again and again and again until I got it right where, you know, you go in there and I would get cigarettes and, you know, because those are all stuff that you can barter with. Alcohol, I don't drink, but I would get all, you know, alcohol. And they said, good choice, good choice. And they would mark it off. And I'm like, oh, thank God. You know, because it was just, you know, you had to do it, you know, 100 times just to get it right. But yeah, they would tell you, okay, what are you going to get from here? Where do you go? And go, you know, you get a knife, get this, get, you know, you need a tent, you need this. And I finally figured out what the hell they were trying to teach me is, you know, and they said, don't over, because you can't carry all of it, you know, so don't overdo it. Just get the basic, you know, the basic stuff that you can, you know, work with if you had to, you know, walk from one place to another. So. But I remember the drills, and they were just drilled inside of you, you know. And they said, if you see somebody dead, decapitate, what? Keep moving. Don't cry. There's nothing you can do. If it's your son, your daughter, you kiss them, and then you move on. You know.
Yeah, and I went through training like that too. I'm not going to mention the name of the person. It was a mutual friend, well known in the field. But it was me, her, and Donna Hendershot. And this is at the time when they were demonizing the Serbs as an excuse to destroy, you know, the Serbians and split Yugoslavia apart and all this other stuff and create war in the Balkans and all the human trafficking that was going on there. So what happened was, in this scenario, me, this other person, our mutual friend, and Donna, who since passed away, we were being chased by Serbs because that's who was being demonized by the, you know, I've read accounts, and I know people that have been on one side or the other of the whole Yugoslavian conflict. I have friends that are, from the Croatian side. So, I'm not, choosing sides here. I'm just pointing out that, the media at the time was demonizing the Serbs as a justification for, the 77-day air raids, the airstrikes that were being meted out, to the Serbian areas and whatnot. And so, in the minds of a lot of people, later on, some of my experiences, they were always trying to make me afraid of Arabs and, Muslims and wanting to fight Muslims and stuff. But anyway, in the scenario, these two Serb gunmen in woodland camouflage pattern and black ski masks, they were chasing. You know that part near where you used to live? It was a mountain, and there was these big boulders, that were strewn all over the place. Because some of the training we went through was there. And anyway, I was running up this hill, and I had Donna, I had our other friend with us, and we were trying to get to the safety of these boulders, at least momentary safety, because, when you're going through this, folks, you can't say to yourself, "Oh, this is a simulation. Oh, this is a virtual reality. This isn't real." No, you're not thinking
Exactly.
those things,
No, you're not.
No, you're running. You're pardon my Anunnaki. You're shitting yourself. You have to get out of here, right? And so, me, Donna, and our other friend were running up this hill. We were being shot at by these two scary woo-woo Serbs, and then our mutual friend, not Donna, had the top of her head blown. It looked so realistic. It looked so realistic. She had a top of her head blown off, and then she fell down. And I looked down. I knew she was she was instantly dead. There's no two ways about it, right? And then Donna, because you remember how empathic Donna was. And what's interesting also, folks, is that a lot of the MyLabs that we knew, they were prompted, manipulated, or otherwise by their MyLab controllers to become first responders, to become firefighters, to become, EMTs, etc., etc., because of how they foresee these possible scenarios playing out later. And Donna, and if I remember correctly, Lorena, you went through volunteer firefighting training, right?
Yes, EMT, paid call firefighter, on hand stuff, which I'm so thankful for because I'm
Yeah.
sure it's going to come handy.
So, Donna was one of those people. She was a firefighter. She was a trained in first aid, etc., etc. And she was also very, very empathic. And when this friend of ours had her head blown off, it looked so realistic. She dropped like a rock. I looked down at her. It was sloping ground. We were trying to get uphill. I looked down. I knew immediately she was dead. Donna fell on her knees, was crying, and was, wailing. And all I did was I just got back into the mode. I grabbed her by the wrist. I said, "Donna, there's nothing we can do for her." And I started
She's
pulling her up
moving.
the hill. Shots are going over our head. And again, folks, you're not saying, "Oh, this is a simulation. This is just training." No, you're
Yes,
freaking
they don't
out.
tell you that.
No,
They
because
don't
it's
tell you
so real,
that.
right? And so, we
It is.
get up to these boulders, and I can still, the shots are pinging off the boulders as I'm trying to peek around to see where these suckers are. You know what I mean? And I remember just, when I had that momentary respite of safety behind the boulders, I was just so distraught. One of my dearest, closest friends, I would just, crying and crying. And meanwhile, I had to say, "No, snap out of it, snap out of it. We have to get out of here," So, and then, the dream, went on from there, or the training exercise, whatever, where we had to get further. We could only pause for a moment because they were right on our ass, and they had these high-powered rifles with scopes. And so, we only could pause for breath for a moment. And I was, trying to stop from breaking down emotionally. And then I had just, had to like snap Donna out of it, grab her by the wrist, and run up the hill, and where we would be, losing the cover of the boulders. But they were getting closer. We had no choice. So, I had a lot of experiences like that, and I know you did too. You had a lot of military experiences in helicopters and rappelling out of helicopters and things like that. And before we end this first half, just wanted to point out to the listeners, I don't think you'll mind me saying this, Lorena, because it's germane to this discussion. Because when I first met Lorena, she was being hammered from all ends. Okay, these big male reptiles. It wasn't just the little reptoids that were, cheeky and mischievous anymore. And playing with the toys anymore. It went from there to these big male reptilians, which one of them stood over me as I lay in a sleeping bag on the floor. One of these big, really tall ones loomed over me one time. And also the military were involved by that point. But also the head games they were playing with Lorena, they were just telling her, "You're fat, you don't have the mental toughness to stop eating." They're making her food look like it was maggots, kind of like in that movie, The Lost Boys, where the vampires are making the guy think that he's eating some Chinese takeout rice, in a box, and then it
It was
turns
just
into
all mind
maggots.
games,
It
to
was
see
all
how you're going
mind
to
games.
react to that.
But then they started manipulating your ex-husband, putting all these visions in his head of wanting to take you and your kids out to the desert and kill you all, remember? He kept getting all these visions, and meanwhile he was unsupportive of you because he was skeptical, he was psychologically abusive, he wanted to have you committed, right? And because of all that stuff that was going on. And I remember, I kid you not, folks, we were having this support group meeting. I think it was at Joyce's house, or it was, I can't remember where it was. It was the second or third time we had a meeting there. And I remember talking to you on the phone because you were pretty pissed off that he was so unsupportive, right? Remember? And I said,
I remember.
yeah, because, just a little backstory, folks, because in that previous meeting, I was sitting next to her ex-husband, and I was saying, "Yeah." And then this, female being got on top of me, began simulating intercourse, and I was paralyzed. I couldn't move. I was pinching my eyes shut because I was so frightened. Yada yada yada. And I can
Did you want
see
to put
this
it really
guy.
close?
Yes, I could see in the corner of my eye. I could see Lorena's ex-husband inching away from me, like getting to the far end of the sofa and hugging the armrest because he thought this guy is a whack job, right? Because here I am, telling these other abductees in my labs about this alien sexual thing that I went through, and I don't even really think it was a sexual experience because I couldn't feel anything from the neck down, et cetera, et cetera. But anyway. He thought I was a whack job. I could see in the look of his eyes, he thought I was crazy. And so you and I were talking after that meeting. And also, folks, this was before the internet. This was before Facebook. This was before internet forums. All we had back then was calling each other up. "Hey, I saw you in an experience last night. Do you remember seeing this? Do you remember what this place looked like? Oh, did you remember Craig was there? Did you see what Craig did?" And that's how we helped each other. We started calling each other up. We did these phone networks, and that's how we reassured each other. That's how we supported each other. And then the internet came along. We began emailing, dreams and shared experiences together. But I said to Lorena on the phone, I said, because she was really irked that her partner was so unsupportive, I said, "Why don't you ask the reptilians or whoever to start abducting him so he knows what it's like?" Remember that?
Oh, I remember. Oh, yeah, and that's exactly why we're divorced now, because I kept saying, yeah, I said, you know what, God, please, for the love of God, for, the military, I said, anybody can hear me, I said, let him go through the hell. I even not, I wouldn't want him to go through everything I went through, but just so he knows what I'm going through. And sure enough, he's like, man, they bend me over, and he says, I remember. Now you know what I have gone through,
I
So,
know, I know, I know. And then he was all, I give him credit. I give him credit because he manned up. He said, "When you were telling that story, I thought you were completely crazy, and I wanted, to get Lorena and I as far away from you as possible, But then he said I had this experience where, these aliens were doing these things to me, and they were basically raping him, and so, I mean, it sounds like a mean
I
thing
mean,
to do,
it's sad,
folks.
and it's horrible, but at the same time, I just wanted for him to know that I wasn't making this up, because he's like, well, I don't know where this is coming from, because she doesn't drink, she's never done drugs, she doesn't even take an aspirin, and yet she's telling me, she's been raped by the military, she's been raped by the reptilians, and this was, this is all happening, and where am I? And I'm like, you're laying in bed, we're in the same bed, but they paralyze you, and then they paralyze me, and all I could see, all you can move is just your eyes, where they're doing all these things to you, and then you wake up and say, I tell them, I've just been raped. this, and this is, you know, and he's like, whatever, you know, you're just dreaming it. And it's like, why do you guys keep telling me I'm dreaming this when I'm feeling this and you don't know what I've gone through? And then when it started happening to him, then he took it seriously. He almost had a nervous breakdown. He wanted to commit himself, you know, and we wound up separating. And he says, oh, you brought this on, you know, you're bringing them, you're like a magnet, bringing the military, the reptilians, the aliens,
bringing James Bartley,
the demon.
Yeah.
He says, you brought this on. So he left, you know, he says, I can't do this anymore. He says, you know, he says, I'm afraid to go to sleep. I'm afraid to eat. I'm afraid to open the door, because he met the military, you know, right. You know, he was in his boxer shorts and, you know, actually his white underwear, Fruit of the Looms. And they came at midnight and, you know, appeared to him. So it's like, okay, now how does it feel? Now, you know what I've gone through, what I've been trying to tell you, you know, that, you know, they're doing experiments on us. You know, and it's like, my God. And I know the experiments do linger, or they have gone on with the man that I am with now, because we've had similar experiences. And he would tell me, oh, my God, do you remember walking there? And I said, do you remember the street we were on? And he says, for some reason, he says, when you told me the name of the street, I remember. He goes, but I thought I was just dreaming. I said, no, sir. I said, well, welcome to my group.
Yes. And you
he
know,
goes, but for the love of God, please don't let them break me.
We've got, you know, so much to share. We've still got another whole other segment to go. And I should point out that, you know, Lorena alluded to a moment ago, she had been not only, you know, sexually assaulted by reptilians, but by the military too. So, you know, there is no love lost between Lorena and what they did to her, because they not only did these things to her in the underground base, but they were using this office building in Victorville that was a corporate front where they were taking her and doing these things that were and mind controlling her and assaulting her. So, you know, there were some very dark aspects to this experience, but I'm just humbled and have so much love and respect for Lorena, because she is so strong. She's a fellow Scorpio like myself, and, you know, she has a lot of conscious awareness, a lot of memory recall. A really gutsy lady, and I'm just so proud to be her friend, because I learned so much from her, and we went through a lot of that stuff together. We helped pull each other through some of these experiences, you know, the aftermath, you know, like the next morning. It wasn't just the military either, and the reptilians, the grays were mass abducting us, and there were also incidences of mass abductions where the military would take, like, the entire neighborhood in her old high desert town. The entire neighborhood would be taken out of her home. Yeah, in the middle of the night, they'd all be zombied out except you, because he had the conscious awareness thing going on. And then they would take these people into, sometimes into a, like a junior high school conference meeting room. And then there would be a military person talking to them about some of the things you talked about future possible scenarios. Now, in the time we got left in this first half, Lorena, the military also said some things to you relative to these end-time scenarios, which are really, really germane today in the aftermath of what we've heard from Hurricane Harvey, people disappearing from relocation and emergency shelters. Didn't the military tell you during all this training, when the time comes, do not go to the emergency shelters, do not go to the camps, do not get on the trains, and disguise your little girls at the time as little boys? Do you remember that?
I sure do. And that holds true to this day. I mean, because they told me, do not take them there. You know, do not take them, you know, to the churches, to, you know, where they have all of you in a, no, do not do that. They said, you hide out somewhere, but, you know, go get your food if you have to go get in line, but do not go to the churches. Do not spend the night at the, you know, at the schools or, you know, where they're going to have every, no, do not do that. Do not separate from your children, because they will, when the time comes, because I remember them saying that, what is it when they lock everything down, martial law is going to take effect. I remember the martial law, and I do remember them saying, oh, don't worry, we're going to take your children and we're going to, for safekeeping. And they said, hell no, because they're going to separate, you know, at first they're going to, you know, do the men, and then they're going to have the women, you know, together. But then they said they're going to separate the women and the children. And they said, do not let them separate you, even though they're going to tell you that they'll be in a safer place. No, do not let them do that. That's why I hope and pray to God that when, if this ever comes down, I can find that, what is that, that three level in the mountains, you know?
Underground base.
Exactly. I hope I find that, or the water. We'll talk about the water one.
Before mm-hmm. we finish this segment, Joyce's late husband, who was a retired judge, he was a very mm-hmm. smart, well-connected guy, a lovely man. And a number of other of us, we did that caravan. We trooped in two or three cars up to the top of the mountain. Remember, they burned off the people that lived on the top of that mountain. Remember,
because yes, they did.
They wanted to make it like a total exclusion zone where they wanted no civilians around, and they just started a fire and they burned off all those houses. And the first fire responders, folks, was not from the local Victorville or Apple Valley Fire Department. No, the first ones who showed up were from Fort Irwin Army Base, like 60 mm-hmm. miles away. Fort Irwin and the local firefighters, they had nothing to do with it. And then before you knew it, they put a cyclone fence near the top of the mountain. They had military personnel with weapons guarding the perimeters, mm-hmm. okay? Yep. So, you know, when people say, oh, they won't, you know, start a forest fire, they won't do these wildfires, they won't do these, you know, artificial hurricanes, no, they'll do anything it takes, including burning people off houses and making all those people homeless, and also all the animals in the forest, you know, and the trees there and stuff too. Because we went there shortly after the fire, mm-hmm. and you can still see, you know, all the trees and all the ash, and it was a scene of devastation. Okay, so this is what we're talking about here. You know, there's a lot of people out there blowing all this smoke, making it sound like all this MyLab stuff is like a Netflix movie, you know, where it's all like super soldiers and everything is all hunky-dory. No, there are some very deep, dark elements. And it should be pointed out that, you know, not all the people that interacted, the military people that interacted with Lorena and even me, were all necessarily bad or evil. Some of them, you know, seemed to have some empathy, some compassion. I don't know if they slipped. I don't know if they slipped through the cracks. They told you that, you know, they did not approve of what some of those guys did to you, and so
But they also told me, they said that they couldn't do anything because it was higher up, and they, you know, and they kept trying, you know, they apologize. I'm so sorry this happened to you. I'm sorry that we have to do this to you. It's just, we have to, you know, we have to do what we're told to do. And it's kind of like, oh my God. And I would ask them, if I was your wife, your daughter, your child, would you let them do this? He goes, I'm sorry, my hands are tied. So not all of them were bad, because I have run across some that were very compassionate, very sweet, very kind. And they said, you know, and they kept trying to, you know, they try to save my sanity, but they kept saying, this will pass, Lorena. It's, you know, you just got to be strong. And, you know, they said that you're very strong willed and strong minded. That's why. So you just have to play into it. So when they tell you it's just a dream, you'll forget about it. You just repeat what they tell them. Don't fight it. But in your mind, you just keep telling yourself, I will remember, and pick up little bits and pieces so it'll trigger it, and then you will recollect everything that they did to you. And I did learn a lot, and I did retain a lot of stuff, but they kept telling me, this one is very strong-willed and strong-minded, and that's why. And I wish I wouldn't have. I should have played along, so I wouldn't have been, you know, tortured and raped and, you know, mentally, you know, messed with, if I had just played along the game that, you know, that they were trying to do with the rest of the neighbors that were living in the area. Because I've seen the neighbors, and I've seen their phone rings, and, or, you know, and then they trigger you somehow, and then you're just like donkey, like cattle, you know, and then you just walk out your front door, and they tell you where to walk, how far to walk. And I remember walking with a lot of my neighbors, and I'm looking around, and I said, Lorena, keep your eyes straight. You know, and it's like, okay, and that could tell me, let me pick out one person. Let me pick out one, you know, thing. And I remember the street that I was on. I'm like, just remember the street, remember the street. But then I'd wake up the next morning and my bottom of my feet were black. And I'm like, well, I know it wasn't a freaking dream because my feet are still 30, you know? So I knew I would have been walking, you know, because you wake up and you have cuts and stuff on your bottom of your feet. And it was crazy.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but
yeah.
I didn't let them break me. I did not let them break me.
No, you didn't. And that's, I really admire you for that, you know, because, you know, there was times when I was pretty much a basket case, wanted to curl up into a fetal position and suck my thumb, you know, because things got so hairy. But anyhow, we got so much, you know, this is why we're going to have Lorena back, you know, for future segments, because, you know, she knows so much. She has so many memories. Anyhow, we reached the end of the first half. For those of you out there listening, if you like what we do, if you believe in what we do, please go to thecosmicswitchboard.com, sign up and become a member, and we'll see you at the top of the next hour.